Rabbul Alameen, the Holy Prophet and his holy progeny, they are the channel for all goodness. So we should realize that whatever is good in this universe, it is because of them. So we need to attach, we need to glorify them, we need to praise them as the manifestations of Allah Almighty's names and his all the goodness that is possible in the material world is because of them.
We'll discuss more with you, Professor, on that topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're exploring how we can instill the deep love and reverence for Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam in our children. Yes, Professor.
So today, in this world, the world which we are faced with, this movement of resistance, the global movement of resistance.
Right.
Which we can see, for example, in the movement of Arba'een.
Yeah.
The Arba'een is becoming a part of that, the manifestation of that global movement.
Right.
Or other events that take place. The focal theme is the imamat of the ummah. That has to be made the theme upon which all our activities should be based.
Right.
We need to make ourselves and our children realize that without, for example, when we talk about imamat, when we talk about congregational prayers,
right,
we take our children to congregational prayers. Apart from the fact that we are worshipping Allah Almighty, we are learning one very important thing: how to follow the imam.
Yes.
In congregational prayers, whoever is the prayer
unified,
leader,
how to be
you
obedient.
Are working together. You're collectively praying behind the imam. You're not allowed to go ahead of him in the practices.
Jamaat prayers. Jamaat.
Before he prostrates, you are not supposed to prostrate.
Right.
Before he stands up,
says you're not, any zikr, you're not supposed.
You're
to.
You're not supposed to, supersede him.
Exactly.
And you are not allowed to remain lag behind. You have to follow him. Al mutaqaddimu anhum marik wal mutaakhiru anhum zahiq wal lazimu lahum lahiq. Neither should be anyone transgressing them, going ahead, not lagging behind, but remaining just together behind him.
Right.
Not shoulder to shoulder, because you can't be shoulder to shoulder with the imam. You have to be one step behind him, but following the prayer leader.
Right.
So this is a very beautiful example, and this is education. This is teaching us to follow the imam. The whole problem with the ummah today is that we have not understood this concept of imamat.
Okay.
This is the reason divergence from the message of Ghadir led to Karbala.
Right.
Our children should know that this is the main reason why, when the Holy Prophet said that after me you should follow Imam Ali, he is the Mawla, people did not accept that message. That led to Karbala. So we need to make our children realize, starting from the family unit, the imam of the family unit is the father.
Father.
He has to play the role of the figurehead. And then everything must revolve around him. Going into the society, the first place, the first stop is the masjid.
Right.
The neighborhood around the masjid. The prayer leader is the imam of the neighborhood.
Right.
So this is the society which needs to be developed if we want to become followers of the imam. It should start from the grassroots, from the family unit. This concept of this making our children part of that global movement.
It starts from the guardian of the family, as for you, is the father of the family.
Father of the...
Yeah, we'll discuss more with you on the topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, Raise your children to have three features. Love for your Prophet, love for his household, and reciting the Quran.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We are with Professor Saeed Salman Akavi, and we're discussing how we can instill the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wassalam in our children. Yes, Professor.
So the Imam is not only, and there are three things which have to be there in any Imam, at any level, starting right. from the grassroots levels of the family unit. The Imam is the Qudwa. He is the role model.
Okay.
And then he has to, he is the focus of our attentions. He has to be loved. He has to be revered. He has to be respected.
True.
And then he is the Murabbi. He is the educator. He has to teach our children. The father has to teach our children.
Right.
He is the, he has to be the role model. He has to be the, he
one
has to be revered and loved and adored, and he has to, with that love, he has to teach them, guide them, educate them, and then he has to command them.
Right.
He's the Imam, he's the guardian, he's the wali. So all these roles are there in at the lowest level to the highest level. If we can create a society which starts off with this family unit in the form of a small unit which is based on the concept of imamah.
Wilaya.
The wilaya is not something out of the world. It's not something supernatural. It is something which human beings have been built in with from the day that
it's
society...
It's very tangible, rather.
It's the day that human beings became civilized.
Right.
Every civilized society has accepted one person to be the head of the society. Head of the family, head of the society, head of the nation. You find, you will find no country in this world where you don't have a president or a prime minister or a king who is leading or heading the society. So it is something very natural in human beings. But the only thing is, the only problem is that a person who has to take the, up that role of the imam has to be qualified to do so.
Right.
In the basic difference between our concept of imamate and wilaya, with the concept of other, any other concept of, like in democracy.
Right.
In the basic difference is that the, a person is does not become qualified to rule because people support him and he's popular. No, it is important that people support him. It is important that he should be popular, he should be adored, he should be loved. But before that, he should be qualified in himself.
Right. So the basic thing that you're saying to develop the love of Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, our children, is that we got to be making this concept very, very tangible for our children, like taking them for the congregation prayers where there's imam, where he's being followed, where there's obedience that is being taught, where there's unity that's being taught, where there is the concept of when to follow, how to follow.
Exactly.
All these things are taught and the concept becomes very, very tangible, and the concept becomes even more tangible when it starts within the family, when there's obedience from the father himself. So
every child should become, be taught, to brought up to become a leader of himself, because he is supposed to become the head of the family, of his own family.
Right.
So that leadership quality should be developed in that person, in the human being. And then it goes up to the
So there's not only this obedience or like the submissive kind of role which is portrayed in the media as well. There's this leadership quality as well that should be developed in our children. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us and for that beautiful discussion. Thank you so much to our listeners. Hope you got more insightful and great discussion today and had a lot to learn about the Islamic upbringing of your children. In case you want to listen to our programs again, go back to our official website, which is www.parstoday.ir/en. There's a tab called of Islam and you'll find an archive of our program there. You can also find us on the social media platforms by just searching Call of Islam. Thank you so much for listening. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Iran's palms and dates. Part 3.
Along with language, flag, religion, customs, traditions, and national arts, food and sofre are among the elements that define nations' identities. Food is a delicious part of culture of every nation and is a good measure to determine kindness, generosity, ethics, protection of environment and nature, and the type of its worldview. Iranian dishes have stories rooted in history. Many of today's dishes in the world were first made and cooked in this country. Iranian dishes have original and natural tastes. We use spices as much as necessary in food. Each culinary school has prominent aroma and flavor that is introduced with it. The fragrance of Iranian cuisine is made of saffron, cardamom, and rose water and a golden color. Iranian food has a mild taste. In cooking, we pay attention to the benefits and what is harmful in the ingredients. Everything must be in balance. Kermanshah, pure animal oil, ambarbu, tarimi and Hashimi rice, lamb of Mughan, Azerbaijan yogurt, Dezful citrus, dates of Bam and Bushehr, Khorasan wheat, and north and south fish each have a special and unique taste. This documentary is a tribute to thousands of years of Iranian cooking. This work is about Iranian food. It is about people we don't know but who are involved in our sustenance. This documentary is a tribute to the mothers of this land who taught their children the cooking traditions of Iran generation after generation so that this old and unique art remains eternal. This documentary is a tribute to our beloved country, Iran. Iran is a country full of wealth in so many ways, tens of generations before us, and we use the same Iranian dishes, and it is up to us to protect the sacred heritage. I'm Nusha Tabibi Gilani. I'm interested in Iranian culture and food. The southern part of Iran has a long history. Khuzestan is a cradle of ancient Elam civilization. Chorazanbil is a huge place of worship. It was established in the capital of the empire at the time. Many civilizations emerge in this part of our country due to fertility and abundance of water. The Chushtar and Dezful historical hydraulic systems represent the prosperity in these areas at that time. For thousands of years, the nourishment of the people of Mesopotamia, the Arabian Peninsula, and southern cities of Iran has been tied to dates. Dates are highly respected in Islam, and the word date is mentioned 26 times in the Holy Quran. There are many hadiths by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and Ahlul Bayt about dates. Dates have many benefits according to the Iranian traditional medicine. Archaeologists and historians believe that palm trees were very sacred among Iranians, and they used to engrave patterns of them on inscriptions. Nowadays, palm trees, fronds, are signs of friendship and peace. Palm trees have a close relationship with children. Children make toys from palm fronds. Mothers use kharak as pacifiers for their kids. One can say palm trees are children's playmates. There are male and female palm plants. Pollination causes fruit production. There is an abundance of pollen in and above the pods of male and female palms. When the flowers open, wind or insects carry the pollen to the female palm. If palm trees are not pollinated with the help of wind and insects, then farmers opt for another way. Farmers carefully separate the pods containing the pollen from the male palms and bring them down. Pollen fecundate female palm flowers. Dates have different names in different stages of their growth from the beginning to the end. People name these stages differently based on cultural diversity in these areas. We need much more time to talk about palm trees. Palm trees have their own stories based on the area they are planted. Each region has its own names, expressions, and customs about the palm trees. Dates have been a part of nourishment of the people of these areas for thousands of years and have a prominent role in social, economic, and cultural life. People use dates in this region on a daily basis. The Abdullah family invited us for lunch. Isa's wife is cooking. We need ingredients to prepare delicious food from fish and dates. The most important part is rolling the fish in date juice. Dates are not just used as ingredients in food, but also used alone. The sofra is made of fronds. Dates cancel out the cold nature of fish. Thousand species of dates are known in the world, and 400 of them are planted in Iran. Perhaps some of these date species have disappeared for various reasons or are rarely found, but many of them are recorded in old documents. Iran is now the second country after Egypt when it comes to growing palm trees in the world. These palm groves extend from the Oman Sea to the Persian Gulf, Arvan River, and Kermanshah. Each region has its own special kind of date. Bahri dates in Abadan, Kapkop dates in Bushehr, and Mazafati dates in Bam are among these kinds of famous dates that people use in different cities of our country. Dates are harvested and eaten when they're not yet ripe. For example, they pick dates that are half ripe. There are many people who enjoy Khorak dates. A large amount of dates that come to the market in Iranian cities are of the Kapgop type. People also use mazafati dates with their shiny black skin. Wet dates have between 15 and 35% moisture. Most of the people who drink tea use dry dates like piyaram and zahedi. Considering the quality of Iranian dates, if the product is offered in better packaging, it can definitely find a wider market in the world. Bushehr is a city that has all the symbols of the southern cities of Iran: fishing, palm trees, kind people, and fantastic regional music. Fake and useless modern architecture has affected buildings of Bushehr, but the remaining old structures represent the beauty of old Bushehr. Bushehr is a city with many alleys that make you forget time when you walk through them. Bushehr is a southern city filled with kindness, fish, dates, and music. The people of this city are very fond of music and poetry. Local songs and instruments can be heard in the alleys, streets, and tea houses all day long. It has over 100 years of history. Payam Jokar has a shop in Bushehr Bazaar. He sells dates and tahini. He has a lot of information about them. Bushehr's famous dates are kapgop. They're sent to internal and external markets as fresh dates and dates with a processed juice. Kapgop, semi-dried dates, are also sold in the markets. This type of date has moderate sweetness, thin skin, and soft flesh, and a relatively small core. They also sell tahini in these shops.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at an important question and a very pertinent question. That question is related to this: what are the signs and distinctions and prominent features of the Shia and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam? As you know, the Shia is a sect within Islam, for those of you who do not know, who believe a lot of things, but one of the prominent things that they believe in is that the successorship of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was the right of his companion Ali and his cousin Ali ibn Abi Talib. So the Shia, a lot of us are followers of this school of thought. You know, many of us were born in this madhab, this creed. A lot of us adopted it later on. But it's important for us to realize that this is not the sole criteria of the Shia and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. Rather, a lot of characteristics have been mentioned by the imams who, you know, we consider our leaders. And it's necessary for us to learn these characteristics, to be informed about them, and then to adopt them to the extent that we can in our lives, so that we can really be, you know, included in this group, and you know, obviously reap the rewards in the hereafter for this inclusion. In this regards, let's take inspiration from the words of the Imams themselves and see how they described the Shia and their followers. Imam Salih alayhi salam said, "Test our Shia with respect to three things," meaning if you want to test whether a person is really a Shia or not, "examine them at three times. The prayer times, you should examine them at this time." How? The Imam says, "To see how well they observe them. Are they praying on time? Or are they lax about it? Oh, there's a lot of time, I can pray later. See if they pray on time, whether they give importance to prayer on time or not. Second, their secrets, to see how well they guard them from our enemies. One of the things that it's necessary for us to do is to keep the secrets of the Imams and also the secrets of the followers of the Imam from their enemies, so that lest they, those enemies, misuse these secrets and harm those Shia. And finally, and their wealth, to see how they help out their fellow brothers with it, whether they're generous with their wealth and they help their fellow Shia brothers with it or not. These are, if you see that these three characteristics within a person and they claim to be Shia, then they can really be considered the Shia and the followers of the Ahlul Bayt. And in another hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said that verily the Shia of Ali were those who restrained their stomachs and their sexual desires, who struggled and fought intensely, who worked hard for their Creator, who hoped for His reward and feared His punishment. If you have seen such people, then they are the very Shia of Ja'far, meaning the Shia of Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at what the characteristics and distinctions of the Shias are in the light of the Ahadith of the A'imma alayhi salam. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Brother Suhail is with me in the studio for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Suhail. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you very much.
Okay, Brother Suhail, for today's discussion, we want to talk about, does Islam prevent women to progress, and does Islam orders and obliges women to stay at home? Is it so?
Okay, so does Islam women prevent women from progress?
Yes.
And do they have to stay at home?
Mm-hmm.
This is a very good question.
Okay.
The good question is in this sense that before we start speaking about women, let's speak about human beings. As we know that human beings are made up of two components, the body and the soul. The body has its needs and the soul has its needs. What Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants from both, from yes. a human being, is to reach the level of perfection that he can attain.
Yes.
So I would like to quote some verses of the Holy Quran to be able to diverge into what do we have progress in women or no.
Okay.
A few of these verses of the Holy Quran are as follows. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا أيها الناس إن خلقناكم من ذكر وأنثى.
Yes.
O humans, verily we have created you from male and female. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says human, he always means male and female. He doesn't mean only male or he doesn't only mean female. So when we see today in the world of today that male are progressing, we also mean that according to Quran and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the women also need to progress. But how to progress, that's up to them within themselves. We have seen in history that sometimes women cannot attain that perfection that they require in this world because of the male dominance.
Yes.
But is it right
mm-hmm.
or not?
Okay.
So we see this kind of issues looking at history. So yes, women can progress, and staying at home, no, it's not for them to stay at home.
So how does it come that staying at home will prevent women from progressing?
How does staying at home?
Yes.
It makes women. No, so here
where
we are
does
talking
this look
about
from?
Women's right of staying at home. Like by staying at home, does it progress or no? If it is the question about staying at home, yes, it does. It is a progress. But it is a progress on the foundation of family.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because we are talking about general women and not wives. So I would like to say staying at home for a married woman is a progress, but for a non-married woman, it's a decline.
It does not necessarily mean that a woman outside the house is progressed.
Yeah, it's not only must that only the woman who goes out is progressing.
Mm-hmm.
It's inside the house as well as progressing. But when normally we say that women or unmarried men staying at home are not progressing, normally we mean that they have no right to education,
mm-hmm.
they have no right to work, they have no right to this kind of accessibilities that men have,
okay.
of which we are not saying that. We are saying that women do have right to progress, and there are some foundations that need to be laid for that progress to take place.
So in the modern world, most usually the women are working outside, for example, shoulder to shoulder with the men. So, but in Islam, there are other responsibilities considered for the women inside the house. What are those?
What are the duties of the women?
The duties and the responsibilities.
House caring, mm-hmm. anything related to the house.
Okay.
It's up to the duties or shoulder responsibilities of the women, let's say from cooking, cleaning, and everything else. But at the same time, let it not be taken as a mistake that it is incumbent upon
yes.
her to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we say that who is the provider of the house in Islam? It's men. So men do have to do work that are outside the house to be able to provide with women with all the tools that she can sustain the house. Now, here we know from a certain narration that when a woman was created, or when Allah created male and female, the female has an essence and a foundation, and that foundation is her beauty. You
okay.
see?
Yes.
And while a woman has no objection, there is no objection for a woman to work outside the house, but she should be able to maintain that beauty for herself, for the husband. You see? So any work that she does, if it is outside the house, it should be in a way that her beauty does not get spoiled, because that is the main aim. We have this family-oriented view in which if the wife is a good-looking, the husband will be able to like provide more and be happy with the family. But for example, you tell me like the wife wants to be equal to men. There are some jobs that it's not sufficient for a woman to do because it's not in their head, their strength. For example, stone picking or like grave digging or engineering meaning the field work.
But it doesn't mean that Islam prevents the women from doing so.
No, Islam does not prevent mm-hmm. women from doing so.
Okay.
But at the same time, we are talking about...
It's better for them not to do
that.
Yeah,
it's better for them because their essence, their essence of being a female is their beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Most of this hard work that they do is, as we see in the feminist movement that takes place, is that the loud war cry of this feminist or the loud... cries of this feminist was freedom, freedom, freedom.
That's right.
Without taking into consideration the concept of family life.
That's right.
You see, and that's why they say that in the West, the women are much free, but then when you see their family, the way they take care of the family is not sufficient and does not succeed for a long run.
That's why.
It ends up at divorce, the child being mm-hmm. fatherless, motherless. And
okay.
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah. We worship Allah and no one but Allah.
So in the Islamic lifestyle, you mean the duties and the responsibilities of both men and women are dictated to them. Before that, they have their own charts. But the case is that, for example, in some countries, especially some tribal or Arab countries, for example, the men are allowed, for example, to marry four wives or something like that, and these wives are all also busy with the house chores or the duties inside the house, nurturing the children. This makes the people outside the religion of Islam think that the Muslim women are not free enough to work outside the house or be present in the society.
So when we see the case that had started like this, same atrocities with the female under the male dominance.
Yes.
And where this
house
movement,
violence, domestic violation. Yes, that's
right. And then we see the feminist movement. Who benefited from the feminist movement?
Mm-hmm.
It's the industries that benefit from them. Why? Because the industry used to keep into consideration taking male servants to work.
Okay.
But male servants had expenses, while women servants at that time were not working. And because they were not working, there were no extra costs. But now, because this movement came up, the industry would take these women, bring them to the industry, and make them work and pay them lower than what they would pay the men. At the same time, while the industry are making use of these women, at the same time, the women think that because now they're working, they're on the same shoulder with men. You see? At the same time, they don't understand the relevance of what's going on behind the screens. So at the same time, when we want to talk about, so here we talked about the working, the
That's
women
right.
who are working.
Okay.
Is it good for them to work? There are some special conditions where
or
they should work.
Or some specific jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Specific job and specific condition as well. When, for example, the male is working but is not able to provide for the house.
Mm-hmm.
So there a woman can work as a necessity.
Okay.
At the same time, no, there is no necessity. The woman wants to work, then there are places that she can work. For example, she can work in practices that are female dominant. For example, when we see during pregnancies, the ladies, the sisters, the wives, yes. when they go to the doctor, they see the doctor is male.
Yes.
You see, that kind of person normally, we don't feel good sending our sisters or our wives or mothers to a doctor that's a guy, a person, a boy.
Yes.
You see, we want him to go to a female doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some places where female dominance works better. One of the fields is doctors. One of the field is teaching, where we have our kids, our daughters that are studying. We would prefer to have a lady teacher than a male teacher in the class. You see,
that's
they
right.
are this specific. But at the same time, you don't want a woman to be working in an industry or a charcoal factory and stuff.
Yes.
Because first of all, she's not created with that kind of strength to do those kind of jobs. Male is more powerful in those kind of work compared to female. Second, for male, it's the beauty is not the essence of male domship. But for a female, the beauty is the actual essence of herself. And that beauty is lawfully applied to the husband.
That's right.
You see, as long as she's there. I have a, so this was regarding the outside work.
Yes.
Now regarding women staying at home. I have one of the stories of Allama Tabatabai.
Yes.
When his wife passed away,
mm-hmm.
he cried a lot. And some of them, the students or the colleagues came and told him that we learn sabr from you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cry like this, have patience. So Allama Tabatabai says that when there was a time that I would spend hours and hours in my room.
Yes.
And if someone would come to visit me, I would break the chain of thought, talk to the guy, and when I go back to my workshop, I would have to do again. My wife learned mm-hmm. what I was doing, and therefore, whenever I would be in my workshop, she wouldn't come.
Enter, that's right.
Enter the room.
The room, that's
right. At the same time, every hour or every 2 hours, she would send me a tea. She would come with the tea, she would keep it and leave without saying anything.
Yes.
You see? And I would put like all the work that he has done. We have seen the works of Al-Mizan.
Yes.
And when he's saying that the dedication is because of his wife,
that's right.
This is the progress of a woman. So when a woman is normally keeping the house intact, it's not an easy job.
That's right.
It's just that it's not normally seen as a job. So there used to be a time that housewifery or being a housewife is known as a profession. But after seeing that a profession is only something that is outside the house,
mm-hmm.
they made that housewives look as degressive thing than, rather than a progressive thing.
That's
a
right.
wife that is a good caretaker of the house.
Yes.
Makes the husband be able to work freely and with peace of mind and including everything.
And this peace of mind is the final outcome of the family foundation, and the role of the women in here is very important. That's all right. Thank you very much, Brother Suhaid. It was very kind of you. Does Islam prevent women to progress? Islam orders women to stay at home or not?
Right.
That's very kind of you. That's all right. Thank you very much, Brother Suhaid. May Allah hasten the reappearance of his final hujjah, his argument on earth, Imam As, inshallah.
Allah.
It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page, and all the episode. God bless you all. في أمان الله.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا
Light polluted skies.
Part 2.
The 1994 Northridge earthquake was a moment, magnitude 6.7 MW, blind thrust earthquake that occurred on January 17, 1994 at 4:30 and 55 a.m. This earthquake damaged more than 40,000 buildings, triggered landslides in some areas, and also caused nationwide blackouts. The whole city went dark.
What I can say is we've just experienced a real whopper here, especially here at the radio station. We're trying to piece everything together.
A lot of those people are camped out over there on the football field there. Now, what you're seeing now is an apartment complex right near here. This kind of gives you an idea of how there's sporadic lighting. Some have lighting, some don't. And look out in the parking lot. There is lighting here now, plenty of lighting. And yet these people are camped outside.
Maybe you've got the kids here. How many youngsters?
Three.
And do they sort of take it in stride, or is it
yeah,
fun, or
are.
Does it get to be
a kids? So for them it's fun, but for us the parents it's a job. It's hard work, and we're freezing. It's cold out here, so we're looking forward to this all being over and life getting back to normal.
People were afraid of the aftershocks and thieves who could steal from their homes in the darkness. So they left their warm homes and went to the cold streets of Northridge. When we talk about urbanization in the modern world, we think of commuters, skyscrapers, and neon lighting in shops. There are images of crowded but orderly streets of Tokyo, Shanghai with famous traditional and glass structures and buildings, and Hong Kong night lights. In these images, day and night in large and modern cities are not much different. These images are full of movements and colorful lights. People could see the Milky Way after the blackout. Before the earthquake, they weren't able to see the Milky Way because of the lights in cities. In fact, people couldn't observe the sky due to the lighting at nights. The American Association for the Advancement of Science, with the data from First World Atlas, has stated that more than 80% of the world's population live under light-polluted skies. People are no longer able to fully observe the celestial objects such as moon and stars due to artificial lights at night. Although we don't know what aliens in Hollywood movies imagine when they look at the dark side of the planet, if you look at these cities from the satellites, you will see masses of light covering a wide area of darkness. French astronaut Thomas Pesquet is one of the astronauts of the International Space Station. He published a picture of the night. In that picture, some parts of the Earth were much brighter than other parts. That bright spot was Belgium. Belgium is one of the smallest countries in Western Europe that covers an area of 30,000 square kilometers, which is a little bit larger than Kurdistan province in Iran. Hong Kong is known as the most serious light pollution in the world. Moscow competes with St. Petersburg and produces 8 times more artificial lights than the world average. After Moscow, cities such as Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, Montreal in Canada, Buenos Aires in Argentina, and Chicago, Detroit, Denver, and Miami in the US are among the most important sources of light pollution. Why light pollution has been widespread? The circadian rhythm in biological clock produces about 10 to 15% of the genes in the human body, and its absence can cause irreparable damage. Today, thanks to the industrial world and modern medicine, melatonin tablets are available in pharmacies. Melatonin, which should be secreted naturally in the body, is produced by artificial methods and chemical drugs. People have to pay money to get melatonin tablets as well.
These days, a lot of Americans and people we know are taking melatonin, but how safe is it?
80% of people have some sleep difficulty, from trouble falling asleep to waking up in the middle of the night to work the night shift and try to sleep during the day. Melatonin is safe. Again, we make it naturally. It's made by part of the brain called the pineal gland. What melatonin does is help to set our sleep-wake cycles. Mm-hmm. Melatonin release in your brain is the signal, hey, it's time to go to sleep. So for people who have trouble falling asleep, or people who have abnormal schedules, or even people who are trying to get over jet lag, a small dose of melatonin can help reset the sleep-wake cycle.
Is it good to trick your body like that, though, into falling asleep?
Mostly, the modern medicine only addresses the complications and consequences of an issue and doesn't eliminate it. Perhaps many people with sleep disorders and insomnia want to be like Bruce Wayne or Batman in American comic books. Maybe Batman decided to become the Dark Knight because of his sleep disorder. But insomnia caused by light pollution should not turn ordinary people into Gotham Knights. Sleep disorders cause depression, obesity, and diabetes. If people are hurt by one of these consequences, they can't even be the heroes of their own family. These people may eventually turn into Don Quixote and fight their imaginary enemies. Today, obesity is one of the common diseases in the world. Doctors recommend weight loss surgery, weight loss drugs, diets, and prohibition of fast foods. These people should also quit drinking soda and reduce their body fat. Before all these treatments, we must control the ambient lighting. First, we have to reduce artificial lights at night and then see the result.
So don't change it just because it's Saturday or Sunday. Go to sleep at the same time as you would during the week. Get up at the same time. Have a cool room, like 65 to 70 degrees. Keep it dark. If you look at your cell phones or iPads or television before you go to sleep, you're trying to get to sleep, you're in bed.
My husband does that.
That light keeps you awake.
People don't even have mercy on themselves by spreading the light pollution. So we can't expect them to be kind to the nature, trees, and animals. Studies show that light pollution has negative impacts on some animal behaviors, such as migration patterns and sleep-wake habits. For instance, light pollution confuses sea turtles and some birds that use moonlight for navigation. Light pollution contributes to the death of millions of birds annually.
And that initial instinct on how to get to the water is influenced by several things very strongly, one of which is the slope of the beach. They tend to understand that downward seems to be the direction to go in. But even more powerful is the light. on a dark sky, even with no moon or no stars, a cloudy dark sky at night, the direction of the water is still the brightest horizon. Hatchlings have developed this instinct to go in the direction of the brighter horizon. Obviously, if towards the land is the brighter horizon because of artificial light, it attracts them, and that's what we see. In Florida alone, every year, tens of thousands, maybe even 100,000 or more hatchlings are disoriented and go toward the land rather than toward the sea, and that's bad. Here's an animal that's been around for more than 100 million years and has survived through ice ages, through all kinds of environmental calamities and obstacles in the environment. And we come along, and because we want our back patio lit up and light shine out onto the beach, we're actually causing the deaths of this ancient animal that predates the dinosaurs.
Artificial lights attract insects and destroy one of the bird's biggest food sources. Artificial lights also affect the natural cycles and birds' food. Light pollution has also negative impacts on urban trees. These urban trees die 6 to 10 years earlier because they live near artificial lights. Light pollution has left the urban vegetation under threat, and many animals have fled from the cities and their suburbs. All of these points were unexpected results of light pollution. Let's talk about humans' negative effects on laying hens. The need for more production and increasing consumption have forced humans to disrupt the natural life cycle of laying hens. The owners of the egg industry turn off the lamps in aviaries several times during the day. In this case, they fall asleep under the artificial night of the hull. After a few hours, the lights are turned on, and they wake up with the illusion that the whole night has passed and then lay eggs. This type of cruel life, short sleep and awakening and laying eggs several times a day, will decrease the lifespan of laying hens. What the capitalist models of the industrial economy do to laying hens is perhaps what capitalists do to ordinary people on a larger, albeit milder, scale. The 24-hour culture and nightlife emerged when people in large cities had to work hard during the day. It happened in the process of industrialization and the rule of capitalist economy in these cities. When protests against harsh working conditions grew, the capitalist system offered people nightlife as a solution for the sufferings of the day. People worked continuously during the day for many years and had the opportunity to spend hours in cafes and casinos at night. They could divert their attention away from the pressure of the employers, capitalists, and bosses. They could deny their problems and free their minds. Cinema and the late-night programs on TV also contributed to this lifestyle. This lifestyle turned people into consumers that had to spend money. This type of lifestyle has a simple formula. You work in a factory during the day and spend your money in the nightly entertainment instead of sleeping at night. If you can't sleep because of light pollution, pharmaceutical companies have produced sleeping pills for you. You keep the capital circulation of these companies running by buying these sleeping pills.
More than 60% of our population may not be getting sufficient amount of sleep, but also sufficient quality of sleep.
For firefighter Matt Reinhold,